This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump has dismissed a claim from his former national security advisor that could play a huge role in his impeachment trial. We get more from AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
In an upcoming book, John Bolton says the president told him he wanted to keep military aid from Ukraine until it helped him investigate Joe Biden. The president and his legal team have denied that, and today in the Oval Office.
False.
The president calling Bolton's allegation false. But Senate Democratic Chief Chuck Schumer says it's a stunning revelation, boosting calls for witness testimony at the trial.
If there was ever even a shred of logic left to not hear witnesses and review the documents, Mr. Bolton's book just erased it.
There is now much more pressure on GOP senators to summon Bolton, who has said he's willing to testify.
I think it's increasingly likely.
Republican Mitt Romney says Bolton has relevant testimony. Three other Republicans would need to break ranks to force the issue. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Public mourning continues, and so does the investigation into the helicopter crash near Los Angeles that killed retired NBA star Kobe Bryant. AP's Ed Donahue.
Outside the Staples Center,
Kobe Bryant's giving me some of the best memories of my life.
Fans like Chris Ramirez were leaving flowers, basketballs, basketball shoes, and lots of Kobe Bryant jerseys.
He gave us everything he had, and at the very least, I gotta come here and respect the man. Not just him, the other people who died.
Bryant's 13-year-old daughter and seven others were also killed. Aviation safety expert John Fox says the helicopter that crashed has a good track record. He was asked about fog in the area that morning.
It was clear that the pilot could see the roads below him, both the 101, the 118, and the 5.
Fox says this investigation will take time. I'm Ed Donahue.
And this is VOA News. U.S. President Trump has offered China any help needed to combat a deadly outbreak of coronavirus that has killed at least 81 people. In a Monday tweet, Mr. Trump said that we're very close communication with China concerning the virus, adding that we have offered China and President Xi Jinping any help that's necessary. Our experts are extraordinary. The latest figures reported by Chinese health officials, including more than 2,700 cases of people being sickened, and again, 81 people who have died from it. Cases have also been reported in Australia, Canada, France, Hong Kong, Japan, Malaysia, Portugal, Singapore, and South Korea, Taiwan, and others. The World Health Organization says most of those people had a travel history in Wuhan, with several others having contact with someone who traveled there. That is the epicenter of the outbreak. There have been no reported deaths linked to the virus outside of China. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived at the White House and was greeted by U.S. President Trump. This is a day ahead of a planned announcement of a new long-awaited Middle East peace plan. VOA Cindy Singh.
Netanyahu thanked Trump, saying he is the greatest friend Israel has ever had in the White House. Palestinian leaders would likely agree that Trump is the greatest friend to Israel and have rejected the deal as dead on arrival.
This deal, which is not based on international legality and international law, which also gives Israel all it wants at the expense of the national rights of the Palestinian people that embodied in an independent sovereign state with Jerusalem as its capital and the right of its refugees for return, does not make base for a quick solution. It comes from a party that has lost its credibility to be an honest broker in a serious and genuine political process.
The Palestinian Authority has not had any substantive dealings with the Trump administration since it recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel in December 2017. Cindy Sane, VOA News, the State Department.
A United States military plane used to help troops communicate and share intelligence on the battlefield crashed in a Taliban-controlled region of Afghanistan, according to U.S. military officials. U.S. Air Force Chief of Staff General David Goldfein said that the plane was an E-11A equipped with the Battlefield Airborne Communications Node. He said at a Washington event that he was unable to provide any additional details. Find more details at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
We'll be right back.
to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 28th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria says any U.S. travel ban will stifle the good of the country.
Our position is that the decision to put Nigeria to Taliban list is not well thought out, and it does not represent the actual situation in Nigeria in respect of its fight against terrorism.
Doctors Without Borders says 1.2 million Nigerians are beyond humanitarian access. Liberian President George Weah delivers his third annual message to the national legislature amid difficult economic times. Gambia's press union contemplates a civil action against President Adama Barrow's government. And the Tanzania opposition party calls on the World Bank not to resume loans earmarked for the government.
What we are concerned and campaigning for is to ensure that President Magufuli and his government are put to task on the issues of ensuring education to pregnant girls.
Ado Shaibu is the spokesperson for the Opposition Alliance for Change and Transparency. And Uganda's opposition parties cannot agree on working together ahead of the 2021 general elections. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's information minister says any U.S. travel ban would stifle the good of the country and its vulnerable people. Lai Mohammed says Nigeria, with the help of the United States government, has done very well in driving terrorist groups out of Nigeria. Mohammed's comments came as press reports say the Trump administration is reviewing a Homeland Security Department recommendation to expand visa restrictions to countries like Tanzania, Eritrea, Nigeria, and Sudan. African countries currently on U.S. travel ban are Libya and Somalia. Mohammed says Nigeria has received no formal warning from the Trump administration about a pending travel ban.
What I said was that we are yet to be formally communicated that we are on the travel ban list, and that until that is done, we will not know why we are put on the list, neither will we know what category of people will be affected. Meanwhile, our position is that the decision to put Nigeria on the travel ban list is not well thought out, and it does not represent the actual situation in Nigeria in respect of its fight against terrorism. I also say that any designation of a travel ban will work against economic growth and investment in the country, and that those who will be mostly affected will be the most vulnerable people in the country, people that will need drugs, people that will need to go to school, and the like.
Many of the countries listed under President Trump's travel ban, some of these countries in Africa, let's say Libya and Somalia, the issue of whether their commitment to fighting terrorism. I guess that's the concern of the Trump administration.
Like we said, I think we'd rather wait for a formal communication so we'll know exactly the reason being adduced. Because if the reason adduced is about fighting terrorism, I think Nigeria should not be on that list. Any attempt to put Nigeria on that list would be undermining our capacity and ability actually to fight terrorism. And it would be playing into the hands of the terrorists and all those who sponsor them.
President Muhammadu Buhari is one of the few African leaders who have visited Washington during President Trump's administration. I know you have said that you have not been formally notified, and this is still not certain whether a travel ban would be imposed on Nigeria. The fact that it's coming up, what does that mean? People think that President Buhari, having visited Washington, there should be some good relations between the United States and Nigeria.
Without any prejudice to what reason America would accuse for putting Nigeria on the travel ban, there's no being saying that we enjoy a very robust relationship with the United States of America. Certainly in our fight against terrorism, we have received a lot of cooperation, both in terms of capacity building, training, and even sales of platforms. And that is why we would be very surprised if the reason for which we are being put on that list is because we are not fighting terrorism enough. And even that is true, I think what we need to do to support us with more platforms, because clearly the government of North Buhari is determined, is focused on fighting terrorism.
Lai Mohammed is Nigeria's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Abuja. The charity group Doctors Without Borders says insecurity caused by the Boko Haram conflict has put more than a million Nigerians beyond the reach of humanitarian workers. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, reports the population of northeast Nigeria is being victimized by all sides in the Boko Haram conflict, which has been going on for 11 years. The Nigerian military says it has the upper hand over the Islamist insurgents, but according to MSF and UN agencies, the humanitarian situation is still dire, especially in Borno State. Luis Eguius, who headed the agency's mission in Nigeria for the past 2 years, says people's movements are limited by the two main Boko Haram factions and the government depriving them of their traditional ways of life. He says people are subject to attacks, abductions, abuse, and exploitation. Women and girls are victims of rape and other forms of sexual assault.
You know, one of the most of the biggest humanitarian crises of the last decades. 7.1 million people in need, depending on humanitarian assistance for survival. Depends on the most basic needs, bone-breaking services, food, water, health, shelter.
He says despite insecurity, humanitarian workers can reach the majority of the people. But Aguillos tells VOA that Doctors Without Borders and other agencies have no access at all to the 1.2 million people living in areas controlled by Boko Haram's two main factions, of whom one is allied with Islamic State. According to recent UN figures, these Nigerians live in 22 enclaves in Borno State. Aguillos says the Nigerian army does not allow humanitarian agencies to go to these areas because this would be in violation of international counterterrorism laws.
Different contexts, counterterrorism laws prevent humanitarian actors to negotiate with all actors, parties in conflict, because they are considered terrorists. So to collaborate with a terrorist is making you a terrorist.
Aguillos notes these laws are preventing access because negotiating with armed groups is considered a crime. Doctors Without Borders is calling on the Nigerian government to allow international humanitarian law to supersede the one on counterterrorism. This, he says, would enable humanitarian agencies to get access to the 1.2 million Nigerians in desperate need of aid. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Liberian President George Weah delivered his third annual message to the National Legislature on Monday amid difficult economic times. As Moses Isgazie will report from Monrovia, Mr. Weah acknowledged the high rate of inflation due to devaluation of the local currency, but he also outlined measures to address the crisis.
It was at 4 p.m. local time when the Liberian leader, by constitutional mandate, stood up before the full membership of the legislature in the joint chambers of the capital. He drilled the population through different spectrum of how the government was going and subjective for the next 1 year. He was quick to outline his foremost priority, as stipulated in the proper agenda for prosperity and development, was keen on rural infrastructure. One side of Mr. Weah's government that has struck the population so hard has been the ability of the government to reawaken the economy. Exchange rates has been high, which has led to high increase in inflation. This, President Weah also admitted, was a serious impediment for the government during the year 2019.
Scarcity of Liberian dollars in the banking system and weak business activities. The large amount of currency held outside the banking system also exacerbated the liquidity situation that was experienced in the latter part of the year.
He said the situation was, however, brought under control by the CBL in working with different stakeholders by introducing different mechanisms. Mr. Weah said his government has kept its promise of not borrowing from the CBL despite challenges it faced in paying the wages of government workers during the year on a review.
With determination, vigor, and focus to stabilize the macro economy reduce inflations, and put Liberians to work in agriculture and other key sectors.
He also announced the withdrawal of the Central Bank of Liberia from the economic management team, which he said is a part of measures to give the CBL an independence.
I hereby announce that the Central Bank will no longer be a part of the economic management team. The EMT will thereafter discuss all but monetary policy issues, leaving monetary policy fully to the board and management of the Central Bank of Liberia.
Mr. Weah said despite these challenges, his government will work in making 2020 a successful year by engaging into and supporting agricultural activities.
With determination, vigor, and focus to stabilize the macroeconomy, reduce inflations, and put Liberians to work in agriculture and other key sectors.
Liberia had a staggering economy in 2019 with no absolute projection. Government workers were short on salaries as they went months without pay, which even led to low and high skill protests at some government agencies. It is not clear if these new measures laid down by the Weah government will help place the country's economy on a smooth footing. Because there are uncertainty on the issues of transparency and accountability in the government fiscal management. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 28th, Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. The Gambian Press Union says it is planning to file a civil action against President Adama Barrow's government to demand compensation for the administration's actions. This comes after police on Sunday arrested 137 protesters, including journalists who were covering an anti-government protest in the capital, Banjul. The protesters have been demanding for President Barrow to step down because they said he reneged on his promise to step down after 3 years in office. President Barrow has said he will not be forced out of office until the expiration of his first full term next year, as enshrined in the Constitution. Mustafa Dabo is vice president of the Gambian Press Union.
We hold a press conference this morning to ask journalists to, one, disregard the government pronouncement that this group is subversive, that they must not be accorded with any media interview, to disregard it totally because the order is illegal according to the constitution and the laws of this country, and two, for also the government to also reopen all these media houses that were illegally closed down, and three, for them to also release journalists who are illegally detained. Because, of course, anybody under this in the Gambia can be arrested on suspicion of committing a crime. But based on all the facts we have attained so far, none of these media houses or journalists that were arrested.
The government is mandated by the Constitution to ensure the rule of law and protect the country's territorial integrity. So if there's anything wrong that could destabilize the country, the government has the constitutional mandate to put its foot down to ensure that there's rule of law and order. And that is why it has to act. Why are you disagreeing with such an action by the government when it has a constitutional mandate to act?
So the constitution of this country is very clear on what the role of the media is. And of course, the issue of 3 years, whether Barrow serves for 3 years or serves goes for 5 years, it's a political question that we leave entirely to political players to sort out. But what we are against is any attempt by the government to suppress media freedom, any attempt by the government to arrest journalists for merely giving a platform to any form of group that is based on democracy and rule of law. Like, this group has been created by the pronouncement of the president himself. It was him who 3 years ago told people he will serve for 3 years and go. And the constitution empowers him to do that.
So what is the next step forward for the Gambia Press Union in this directive or the press conference you held? What's next?
Well, I mean, we are clear about what action we will take in our press release. We're taking a civil action against the government for illegally shutting down a media house, taking a civil action to ensure that people whose businesses were temporarily shut down get some form of compensation. And we are also making sure that there is some form of payment or take the government to court on the issue of the illegal arrest from our own perspective. But of course, the lawyers would have to determine how this will be done or what is more appropriate under the circumstances. I'm not a lawyer.
When will this begin?
Well, we're talking to our lawyer right now, and the lawyers will have to decide when that happens. But of course, we have a history of that. We've taken Gambia government to ECOWAS court before. We've taken Gambia government to Supreme Court of the Gambia. So we have a history of that. When we decide to take you to court, we do.
Mustafa Dabo is the vice president of the Gambian Press Union. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from the capital, Banjul. Opposition political parties in Uganda are having a difficult time working together ahead of the 2021 general elections. Members of the Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, Uganda's largest opposition party, say they prefer to work with established parties rather than pressure groups. But some analysts warn such disunity will weaken the opposition further. Mugumi Davis Rakarinchi reports from Kampala.
John Chikonyogo, FDC deputy spokesperson, says his party has not yet determined to work with any opposition groups, in particular that of People Power Pressure Group that is led by parliamentarian and artist Robert Chagurany, also known as Bobby Wine.
As FDC, normally we discuss with the parties. So discussing with the parties is easier for FDC. That's why most of the time it was Honorable Chagurany, People's Power, discussing People's Government, because they are at par. But for us as a political parties, we shall make a decision in the future who to accommodate more in those discussions. But as we stand today, normally we discuss with the parties, established organizations.
The People's Government refers to a shadow government formed by FDC founder and four times presidential candidate, retired Colonel Chiza Besigye. Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson of People Power, says most Ugandans they have talked to have expressed their support for Chagulanyi and want him to run for the presidency in 2021.
You see, once you've been in politics for a long time, you obviously have made some enemies, you have made some mistakes without a doubt, no one is perfect and all of that. You obviously have a bit of political baggage, I will call it carefully so. And the other is that he's young, he's agile, he's energetic, and majority of the people that he represents are those who have not seen another leadership. Mr. Museveni has been in power for 34 years. And majority of Ugandans are way below that age.
Charles Rwomushana, a political commentator in Uganda, says it's important the opposition stop wrangling and work together because they do not have more resources like the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM.
You do not have a structured opposition that is reflected in the population. You only have dissent, fine. You have anger, you have sentiment that is reflected during voting and so you vote one candidate. The last two, three waves have been for Chiza Besigye. My projection is it's going to be the same. That even if they combine, they cannot go beyond 40% because the whole tide is against them.
Rwomushana says the ruling party is supported by state institutions, including security personnel that work against the opposition. During the 2016 campaigns, the opposition attempted at forming the Democratic Alliance, or TDA, a coalition of major opposition groups in the country with the aim of fronting sole candidates against the ruling NRM. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Tanzania's Opposition Alliance for Change and Transparency, also known as ACT Wazalendo, is calling on the World Bank now to resume loans earmarked for the government because of human rights abuses in the East African country. The party's spokesman, Ado Shaibu, says the bank directors should seek a commitment from the Tanzanian government that the rights of citizens are protected. Supporters of the ruling party say the accusations of rights abuses are false and regrettable. They accuse ACT and its leader, Kabwe, of trying to undermine the government's efforts at boosting living standards. ACT spokesperson Ado Shaibu tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the World Bank should withdraw its support due to evidence of human rights abuses in Tanzania.
What has to be clearly understood is that neither our party nor our party leader, Mr. Zitto Kabwe, is opposed to efforts by the government to improve education in our country. What we are concerned and campaigning for is to ensure that President Magufuli and his government are put to task on the issues of ensuring education to pregnant girls and guaranteeing human rights in Tanzania. And, you know, these things are not new. to put it briefly, that we are not satisfied with the proposals put forward by the government to create separate schools for pregnant girls. But we are opposed to this because it's likely to bring stigma and segregation to these young girls. We want them to be accommodated in the same system of education with the other girls.
Do you think that the loan, if approved on Tuesday by the board of the bank, would embolden the government?
We know that the government needs the loan badly. So this is the right time to pressurize the government, because we, the politicians here in Tanzania, have tried to urge the government not to segregate pregnant students. We have urged the government to adhere to the rules of good governance and the human rights. But it seems that our concerns are falling into mishears. So we hope that the board of directors of the World Bank can do that, because the government is in tight grip.
Now, so Ado, is your party saying that the World Bank should make the protection of human rights or the respect of human rights as one of the preconditions before releasing the monies or funds to the Tanzanian government?
Exactly. Because it's not acceptable to provide loan to assist the government with the dictatorial tendency.
But some people are accusing your party of trying to undermine the government effort to fund education for the people of Tanzania. And what you are doing is not patriotic.
We, the members of ACT Wazalendo, are not opposed to the efforts of the government to improve the standard of education in the country. We believe that by pressurizing the government to also consider pregnant girls in tandem with the effort to improve the level of education, because you cannot say you want to improve the education standard while at the same time you leave behind more than 5,000 children who are not allowed to continue with the education because they are just pregnant.
Ado Shaibu is the spokesperson for the Opposition Alliance for Change and Transparency in Tanzania. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Nigeria's information minister says any U.S. travel ban will stifle the good of Nigeria and its vulnerable people. Lai Mohammed says Nigeria, with the help of the United States government, has done very well in driving terrorist groups out of Nigeria. Mohammed's comments came as press reports say the Trump administration is reviewing a Homeland Security Department recommendation to expand visa restrictions to countries like Tanzania, Eritrea, Nigeria, and Sudan. African countries currently on U.S. travel ban at Libya and Somalia. Mohammed says Nigeria received no formal warning from the Trump administration about a pending travel ban. Liberian President George Weah delivered his third annual message to the national legislature on Monday amid difficult economic times. Mr. Weah acknowledged the high rate of inflation due to devaluation of the local currency, but he also outlined measures to address the crisis. And the Gambian Press Union says it is planning to file a civil action against President Adama Barrow's government to demand compensation for the administration's actions against the press. That's it for this Tuesday, January 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best pan-African music. Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. Meet artists, too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.